Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're getting into a surprisingly common cognitive trap.
Yeah, one that really dictates how we respond to almost everything.
From our deepest emotions to, you know, the most mundane physical sensations. And the idea that unlocked this for us, which is kind of funny, came from a coffee drink.
Right. At a bookstore in Asheville, North Carolina. Malaprops.
Malaprops, yeah.
Yeah.
The drink was called Ocular Conclusion.
And when we saw that phrase on the menu,
it
clicked. It perfectly captures this mental leap that we're all making constantly.
So our mission today is to really explore what happens in that gap when your brain is moving way faster than your actual experience. We're talking about that jump from a quick glance, a sensation, to a final definite label.
And it really points to this deep cultural training we all have. We've been sort of conditioned to treat knowledge like sight.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, it's fast, it's instantaneous. You look at something and you assume you know it. And we take that same logic and apply it to our inner lives.
So you glance at a feeling and you think you have the full story.
Instantly. And that's where the trouble really starts.
Okay, so let's unpack that. The mechanics of this ocular conclusion.
Well, if we define it, it's that immediate non-negotiable jump from a stimulus to a judgment. You see the thing, bam, you conclude the outcome.
And the key to the process is actually what's missing from it.
Exactly. There's no investigation, no sitting with uncertainty. You're not allowing the information any time to settle into a real picture.
And the power of the name itself feels so critical here. The moment you slap a label on an experience,
the inquiry just stops. Cold.
Case closed.
Yeah, the brain registers done because the mind loves efficiency, you know?
Mm.
And categorization is comfortable, the mystery is solved, and it can just file it away and move on.
And we see this all the time in the outside world. You see a big leafy thing.
It's a tree. Done.
And that's useful, but it shuts the door on anything else. Like, what kind of tree? Is it healthy? How old is it?
And we do the exact same thing internally. You see someone's face flicker for a second.
And you think, they're angry.
They're angry. Done. You don't pause to think, well, maybe they just got a weird text. Maybe they have a headache. That label just shuts down the whole relational field.
And for self-knowledge, it's happening inside our own bodies. You feel like a tightness in your chest.
And the immediate conclusion is anxiety.
And that's the end of the line. The curiosity is gone.
Which brings up the most critical question in all of this. What if you named it before you actually knew what it was?
Right. What if that label is actually locking you out of the real experience?
And this brings us right to the core conflict, which is this dramatic mismatch in speed.
Okay, explain that.
Your cognition, your thoughts, your internal chatter, it moves at the speed of electricity.
So almost instantaneous, milliseconds.
Yeah, milliseconds.
Yeah.
But your actual experience, the processing happening in your body, an emotion being felt.
That stuff moves at the speed of the body.
Exactly. It's on the clock of your breath, your heartbeat, your digestion. We're talking seconds, minutes, sometimes hours.
So that speed gap is the whole problem.
It's the entire problem. Thought moves faster than reality, so the conclusions are always based on incomplete data. It's like a flash photo snapshot when the movie is still filming.
But wait, don't we need that speed for survival? Like if I see a car swerving towards me, I don't want to slow down and observe my feelings about it.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
And yes, for immediate physical survival, that speed is essential. It's a fast twitch reflex.
Okay.
But it is disastrous for self-knowledge. The challenge isn't to slow down how you react to a speeding car. It's to slow down the internal labeling reflex, the one that applies those quick categories to things that are not immediate physical threats.
So it's about learning to separate two different kinds of thinking.
Right. There's the fast automatic thinking. That's our cognition.
Yeah,
the autopilot. And then there's the slower, more deliberate act of watching that autopilot. Yeah. That's metacognition.
It's like being the air traffic controller for your own mind, asking, is that pattern still the right one for right now?
Precisely. And we need that distinction to learn how to observe our inner wilds. What's actually happening inside is often completely different from the quick conclusion we jump to.
So let's go back to that anxiety trap.
Okay. So the inner experience might just be a physical rush.
Yeah.
You know, agitated cells, a lot of energy in the nervous system.
And the instant conclusion, the ocular conclusion is, I'm having anxiety. I need to shut this down.
But what if you held off on that name?
Yeah.
Just for 5 minutes? If you just observe the sensation without calling it anxiety,
you might find out it's actually excitement.
Or creativity, getting ready to do something. And that's the danger. Once you call it anxiety, you file it under danger, and you might be shutting down a breakthrough that was threatened to emerge.
The label forces a defensive response.
It really does.
Okay, if we want a concrete, totally modern example of this, we just have to look at the WebMD panic spiral.
Oh, it's the perfect illustration of an ocular conclusion just running wild.
So you feel a mild sensation, a little tingling in your left arm.
And your brain just demands an answer right now. So it goes to the quickest source of identification it can find.
Google.
And immediately, you're looking at the most extreme possibilities.
Heart attack, stroke, something terrible.
And in maybe 90 seconds, you've made that sight-to-judgment leap. You're in a panic. A tiny sensation has become a life-threatening emergency in your mind.
All because the cognitive labeling system jumped way ahead of what the body was actually saying.
The alternative is just so much slower, but so much safer.
You feel the tingle and you just observe.
You ask questions.
Mm.
When did this start? What was I doing? Was I maybe lying on my arm for 2 hours while reading a book?
And then you gather data, you move around, you wait 10 minutes.
And a much slower conclusion emerges. I just slept on it weird. It takes 10 minutes, not 90 seconds, and it saves you all that stress.
This is why that practice of what you call cellular observation is so powerful.
Yes. Instead of trying to diagnose something, you just feel it.
So you ask, what texture is this? Is it jagged? Is it smooth? Does it feel hot or cold?
That pause is everything. Because when you immediately name it, this is a headache, this is frustration, you stop experiencing it.
The name becomes a substitute.
A substitute for the direct, messy, complex experience itself. And that's how you get locked out of your own inner reality. You end up relating to a definition, not the thing that's actually happening inside you.
So how do we fix this constant rush to label everything?
Well, the solution is ancient, but like we said, it has a bit of a marketing problem.
You're talking about meditation.
Right. And when people hear that word, a lot of them just tune out. They picture trying to empty their mind or achieve some, you know, mystical state.
But that's not really the core of it.
Not at all. The utility is pure cognitive training. It's the focused practice of cultivating metacognition, but with a really crucial nuance.
Which is?
Embodied metacognition.
Okay.
This isn't just watching your thoughts from a distance. It means watching your thoughts and your sensations and your conclusions while staying grounded in your physical body.
Your body is the ground floor of reality.
It is. So the practice is just to watch the mind do its thing. Watch it panic, watch it judge, watch it spin out. And try to make those ocular conclusions.
You're just creating a tiny bit of space.
A tiny bit of space to notice without judgment. Oh, there I go again, rushing to a conclusion.
Mm.
The goal isn't to be calm, necessarily. The goal is to notice the rush itself.
Is there a practical tool for this?
Yeah, something called embodied semantics. You just pick a single abstract word, like freedom or courage.
Okay.
And then you just sit with it, and you'll feel how fast your brain wants to pull up the dictionary definition to know what it means right away.
And the goal is to resist that urge.
Just resist. Let the word be undefined for a little while.
It's surprisingly uncomfortable.
It really is, because we're so trained to define everything instantly. Just sitting with a word that's allowed to be a mystery feels almost unsafe.
But that friction is the point.
Friction is the whole point. You're unlearning that bing, bang, boom drive to make meaning too fast.
So this leads us to a more formal structure for this, a kind of six-step practice for slowing down.
Exactly. The slow conclusion practice. It gives you a roadmap for handling any intense internal sensation without just shutting it down with a label.
So step one.
Step one is the simplest, but we often forget it. Just notice the sensation. Simply acknowledge, oh, something is happening inside me.
Step two is to resist the name.
Your brain is going to offer you all the old hits, anxiety, boredom, hunger. Notice them, but don't grab them. Don't claim the label yet.
And then step three, which sounds like the hardest part, describe without naming.
This is the real work. You have to forbid yourself from using psychological labels, only physical descriptions.
So instead of I feel sad,
you would say there's a density behind my eyes. Instead of I'm panic, you'd say my chest feels compressed and my thoughts feel jagged. Keep it purely sensory.
Why is that constraint so important?
Because a label like sadness comes with a huge amount of baggage. It has assumptions about the cause, the solution.
A whole story attached.
A whole story?
Yeah.
But a physical description, density behind my eyes, that's just neutral data. You're just gathering information, not writing the script for the next 2 hours.
Okay, that makes sense. Then step four is track overtime.
Right. You observe how the sensation shifts. Set a timer for 5 minutes or track it for an hour. Does it get stronger? Does it move? This is where the real data comes in.
And only after all that, step five, do you let meaning emerge.
Only after the observation, you allow a story to appear based on the data you collected, not a story you forced on it from the very beginning.
And maybe you realize that density behind your eyes wasn't sadness at all, it was just exhaustion.
Or that tightness in your chest was actually grief, not just general anxiety. The meaning is more nuanced.
And finally, step six.
Hold lightly. Acknowledge whatever meaning comes up as just one possible interpretation, not the absolute truth. It's a hypothesis, not a verdict.
You're unlearning the need for certainty.
That entire sequence is the antidote to the bing, bang, boom of the ocular conclusion.
So why does all this matter? Why is choosing the slow path so important?
Well, fast conclusions are great for simple mechanical tasks. Tying your shoe, driving a route you know.
But they're terrible for anything complex.
Terrible. For self-knowledge, for understanding your own emotions, and especially for relationships. Because the fast brain relies on pattern matching.
And that's where this causes real, avoidable conflict.
Okay, picture this. Your partner walks in the door, their face is tight. Your pattern-matching brain instantly finds a memory of a fight from 2 years ago where they had that exact same expression.
And so your brain concludes.
They are angry at me. I need to defend myself.
But you're responding to a pattern from the past, not the reality of the present.
Exactly. The reality might be they just had a terrible day at work. But because you jump to that conclusion, you escalate by saying something sharp like, what did I do wrong now?
And you've created conflict out of thin air.
All because of an ocular conclusion. The shift is moving from this attitude of, I have to have an answer right now, to...
What can I learn about what's happening right now?
It changes everything. It moves from solve it to understand it, from name it to just be with it.
That's a huge shift. Observation without judgment as a form of care.
Yes. And that's where the reward is. You get these moments where you pause and suddenly realize, whoa, I had no idea this feeling was connected to that thing that happened last week.
That's the flash of real understanding.
And that is the true opposite of the ocular conclusion. It's the insight that only emerges when you give something time and space.
True understanding takes time. It requires a willingness to just sit with uncertainty.
So we come back to it. The ocular conclusion is the rush to knowing that locks you out of your own experience. The practice is resisting that bing, bang, boom.
So we want to leave you with a challenge for this week. Think about your own life. What conclusion have you jumped to recently that might not actually be true?
What difficult feeling have you named? Stress, frustration, whatever, that you haven't really experienced. It's just pure physical data.
And what would happen if you let that feeling, that tight chest or that jittery energy, just be unnamed for a couple of days?
If you only described it by its texture or its movement, just to see what new meaning might show up.
We want to close with some words from Pema Chodron, which really sums up the intention behind all of this. She wrote,
"The most fundamental aggression to ourselves, the most fundamental harm we can do to ourselves, is to remain ignorant by not having the courage and respect to look at ourselves honestly and gently."
And looking at ourselves honestly and gently means we have to stop that automatic rush to judgment.
It means being willing to observe without needing to conclude right away.
Because true wisdom, in the end, really lies in that willingness to just not know for a while.
And to patiently allow that real lived knowledge to emerge at its own speed.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.